The sounds from yesteryear. The theme tune from the children's TV series Skippy. Back then in the 1960s, a boy called Sonny could hop out into the Australian bush with a preternaturally gifted kangaroo, foil miscreants and solve crimes. There was no need for Skippy and Sonny at the Newlands Cricket Ground in Cape Town on Saturday, 24th of March. TV cameras spotted the Australian cricketer Cameron Bancroft pulling a yellow object from his pocket and rubbing it on the ball. When he realised he'd been filmed, he hid the object in his trousers. When he was questioned by the umpires, Bancroft maintained it was only a cleaning cloth being applied to the ball. The 25-year-old later said that was a lie. It was sandpaper. Panic at being caught had led him to choose the wrong path.
You don't know the power of the dark side. I must obey my master.
Bancroft was only playing in his eighth test match for Australia and really didn't have the moral heft to say no. How could a newcomer not play ball? How could a youngster stand up to the men in the nose, such as skipper Steve Smith and the vice-captain David Warner? The Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull wasn't at all impressed with the shenanigans. He said the behaviour had left the nation shocked and bitterly disappointed.
It seemed completely beyond belief that the Australian cricket team had been involved in cheating. But I have to say that the whole nation, who holds those who wear the baggy green up on a pedestal, certainly higher than any politician, that's for sure, it's wrong, and I look forward to Cricket Australia taking decisive action. It honestly seems beyond belief, and I have to say, knowing a number of the players, including the captain, quite out of character.
Well, Cricket Australia, which runs the game in the country, heeded the Prime Minister's words and banned Smith and Warner for a year from the Australia team. Bancroft was suspended for 9 months. Smith and Warner have lost lucrative advertising contracts. The duo also took another financial hit as they were dropped by their teams in the cash-rich Indian Premier League. When the three came back to Australia, they were the epitomes of contrition. Bancroft in Perth was the first to blub.
I want to say that I'm very sorry. I love the game of cricket and playing for my nation and my state. There is no greater pride to me. I am extremely disappointed and regret my actions. I'm sorry too to those people who have looked up to me around the world, especially the kids. I know I'm a role model and I've not acted like one in this instance. I understand I have let many people down and I understand the disappointment in the broader community. It is something I will regret for the rest of my life.
And a few hours after that lachrymose lament, Smith was on the mea culpa train.
To all of my teammates, to fans of cricket all over the world, and to all Australians who are disappointed and angry, I'm sorry. As captain of the Australian cricket team, I take full responsibility. I made a serious error of judgment. It was a failure of leadership, of my leadership. I'll do everything I can to make up for my mistake and the damage it's caused. If any good can come of this, if it can be a lesson to others, then I hope I can be a force for change. I know I'll regret this for the rest of my life. I'm sorry and I'm absolutely devastated.
A day after Bancroft and Smith, it was Warner's turn to apologise. At 31, he conceded he might never play for Australia again. Tom Eaton's a cricket writer for The Times in South Africa.
Before I talk about my take as a writer or an observer of people, I have to give my take as a South African, which is, you know, this is a sort of caveat, which is to say that there is no sweeter sight for a South African to see an Australian who has, you know, lorded it over you for the last God knows how long, blubbing on three different occasions. So it's been wonderful to see all the tears from a South African perspective. That's a purely jingoistic kind of nationalistic point of view. As a writer or as an observer of people, I think those tears are quite complicated. For a start, I think they were genuine. I don't think there was any play acting there. However, I think they don't quite mean what we think they mean. I suspect that part of the tears was a recognition of just how wrecked certain futures are. I don't know how much was remorse and how much was just the dawning realization of what had actually happened. And then the other thing to bear in mind is, with all due respect to sports people, these are not very sophisticated human beings. These are not philosopher kings. These are essentially guys who, when they were about 12 or 13, decided they wanted to hit a ball with a plank for the rest of their lives and have dedicated themselves to doing that. And I don't want to say that they're, you know, emotionally immature, because obviously test cricket demands all kinds of strength and discipline that we can't even imagine who don't play it. But having said that, these are not guys who have worked through a lot of adult stuff in their lives. And when I saw them all having a blub, really, I saw kind of three schoolboys caught in a stupid lie, you know, sitting in front of a headmaster, all having a bit of a cry. So I think they were real tears. Just how complex and adult those tears were, I'm not so sure.
Schadenfreude aside for a South African, The fact is that the cricket has been lost, and South Africa's achievement. This is South Africa's first test win over Australia for a generation. And that seems to become secondary to all of this, which is a great shame for the South African team.
Yes.
Who has impressed you? Have any cricketers emerged, in your opinion?
Well, I think this series has sort of made two reputations. We all knew that, you know, AB de Villiers was good. We all knew that Vernon Philander could win matches on his day. But I think that the two who came out of this with their reputations really enhanced were Aidan Markram, for one, who's looking like a sort of a beautiful, classical, attacking opening batsman for the ages. And the other was Kagiso Rabada. Rabada, we all know, you know, we saw him coming. We've enjoyed watching him ride through the ranks. But what this series did for the first time was it underlined him as a bowler who frightens teams. You know, he's taken lots of wickets against all sorts, but this was the first time you got a clear impression that Australia didn't want to face him. And I think that really has enhanced his reputation, because South Africa hasn't had a genuinely frightening bowler since the absolute heyday of Dale Steyn. And then even then, Steyn has been more skiddy than knocking off heads. And so I would say you've kind of got to go back to the prime of Alan Donald to find a pace spearhead that teams start jumping around and backing away from. So I think, Rabada definitely, and then Markram.
The Australian Cricketers Association said earlier this week that the punishments were harsh. That led to speculation that the players might appeal. But Smith and Bancroft have said that they're going to accept their sanctions. As well they should, says Eaton.
You know, I've been sort of vacillating over the punishment, and I think what everybody got wrong was they thought the punishment was for ball tampering, which obviously it wasn't. These bans are for bringing the game into disrepute. I think that that's fair, especially in the context of Test cricket, which is struggling for credibility. You know, a lot of fans are saying, ah, it's all rigged. Match fixing is still everywhere. And I think the moment you have a planned conspiracy, it just gives credence to those people. So I'm happy with the ban, and I suppose a players' union has to appeal, you know, in favour of its employees. But I think the ban is fair. I think the suggestion that it was harsh is a little bit disingenuous and perhaps a little bit tone-deaf, you know, not really understanding the danger that Test cricket is in.
Tom Eaton, a cricket writer for The Times in South Africa. He brings me to the end of this week's Sports Insight. My thanks to Benjamin Reyes and Alain Bleu for studio production. From me, Paul Myers, ciao.
Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Keep me cockatoo cool, curl. Keep me cockatoo cool. Oh.
don't go acting a fool, girl. Just keep me cockatoo cool. All together now,
tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.
And take me koala back, Jack. Take me koala back. He lives somewhere out on the track, Mac. So take me koala back all together now.
Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.
Let me abos go loose, Lou. Let me abos go loose. They're of no further use, Lou. So let me abos go loose all together now.
Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.
And mind me platypus duck, Bill. Mind me platypus duck. Oh, don't let him go running amok, Bill. Just mind me platypus duck all together now.
Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.
Play your didgeridoo, Blue. Play your didgeridoo. Like, keep playing till I shoot through, Blue. Play your didgeridoo. All together now,
tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.
Tan me hide when I'm dead, Fred. Tan me hide when I'm dead. So we tanned his hide when he died, Clyde. And that's it hanging on the shed all together now.
Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.